Alan Kohler here, and I'm talking now to Maurice Brand, who is the CEO and founder of Global Energy Ventures, which is a business that started 4 years ago to compress natural gas. So it's an alternative to liquefying natural gas to transport it. It just can't go as far as LNG, so it's only for closer markets, but it's further than a pipeline. So the idea with compressed natural gas is that you can take it to markets more cheaply than LNG, but it'll go further than you can take it further than a pipeline. It's more expensive than a pipeline. So it's in between the cost of a pipeline and the cost of LNG, and the distance it goes is the same. It's between the pipeline and between the how far you can get with LNG. So the bloke who's doing it, Maurice Brand, used to run LNG Limited. He left 4 years ago. LNG went broke this year. Apparently nothing to do with Maurice, of course, because that was a fair while ago that he left. But anyway, it's worth knowing that. Global Energy Ventures is pre-cash flow, if I can put it that way. It's burning $500,000 a quarter and has $2.8 million in the bank, as Maurice says. So they will need to raise some more money next year, but he reckons that'll only be done once they've got some firm contracts. The share price actually popped up last week quite a lot, in fact. Well, you know, from what, 5 cents to 10 cents. So it's now 10 cents. It's doubled in the past week because they announced that they're looking at compressing hydrogen as well as natural gas. And hydrogen's, as we all know, all the go at the moment. It's the big new energy story, hydrogen. So they're dipping their toe or foot perhaps into that space to try to see if they can compress hydrogen as well. Anyway, interesting business. Here's Maurice Brand, CEO of Global Energy Ventures. Well, Maurice, I always start these interviews, particularly with companies that are still in negative cash flow, with discussion about cash. So just tell us how much you've got in the bank now and how much you're burning per month.
Yeah, well, certainly, as we reported at the end of June, $2.8 million. This is all in Australian dollars. We're less than $500,000 a month on our burn rate. We've got no immediate need to top up. We're very comfortable with our current cash position. The work that we're now doing in this new area of hydrogen is going to cost us about $250,000 over December and the March quarters, because most of it is actually internal engineering work done by our technical team. And our strong relationship with the approving authority, American Bureau of Shipping, and that relationship allows us to deal with the issues fairly cheaply and efficiently. So a good position. I mean, clearly we will strengthen our cash position once we hit at the next commercial milestone for our compressed natural gas ships, but that'll be on the back of obviously having binding offtake agreements with bankable customers.
But that does tell me that you've got less than 6 months cash. I mean,
No. We've got 2.8 in the bank now.
2.8, right. And how much are you burning? I thought you said 500,000 a month.
No, a quarter, sorry.
A quarter. Right. Oh, well, that's all right. No worries. It's
just
fine.
Got a heart attack.
You will need to raise more money before you are cash flow positive from your operations.
Oh yes, sometime probably next year or when it's appropriate. But we will only do that on the back of some binding arrangements in place.
Right.
And that's primarily just to tidy up any final engineering work that would be required, because our basic ship is completely designed. No more funding really needed for the ship because it's all been done, dusted, ready for construction. But what we do need, of course, is to integrate that with the particular project and any particular features of that project, which could deal with, you know, how you're loading the ships and then how you're unloading them at the customer's end.
Right.
So that all has to be seamless. And that work is not terribly expensive, but it does need to be done before you can bank a project.
Now, Maurice, I noticed you were Managing Director of LNG Limited a while ago, up till, I think, 2016. That business went broke this year. So what sort of shape did you leave that company in?
Well, I was very proud. I retired in July 2016. I just turned 70, to be honest, and felt that I needed to spend more time in Perth with family and friends, etc. So, yeah, I think we had about $85 million in the bank, no debt. All the approvals were in place based upon the project in the US. So very, very disappointing to see all that whittled away over 4 years to get to the point where they arrived at earlier this year. Extremely disappointing. And frankly, from my point of view, should never have happened.
So you didn't retire, obviously. You came back to work. What happened?
Well, I had a few months off and then felt that I was always very interested in the compressed natural gas space. And together with Gary Triggle-Cannon, who joined me at the same time, we did a review of all the various options and designs for marine CNG on a global basis and determined that, quite frankly, none of them could work because they had insufficient payload. And that's a conclusion that many others have reached, but we needed to do that research ourselves. But we've finally located a technical group in Canada. They had a previous company called CNG, S-E-A-N-G, and they had this optimum design that in August 2016 received American Bureau of Shipping in principle approval in principle. So we sort of cottoned onto that and felt, goodness me, this actually can maximise the amount of that payload or the amount of cargo in a ship, and therefore the economics will be substantially more favourable. So on the back of that, we then set about acquiring that company, which we did through the next 12 months. We took control of a small public company called TTE Petroleum that was really not doing a lot, and we just used that as our vehicle to move forward. So the first year was really all about securing the restructure, securing the company in Canada, and in particular the two technical guys that are still with us now. They are absolute experts in compressed marine applications, both structural, mechanical, naval engineering backgrounds, so exactly what we needed. And then the next 12 months, we went about completing all the testing of the pipe, which obviously was a key requirement, and that took 12 months to test it.
That Canadian company owns the technology, do they?
No, GEV does.
No, yeah. But when you bought them, they owned that their own technology, did they?
Yes. The company and the inventors had the optimum provisional patents and some patents on it. So we acquired the lot and restructured the company. So now GEV owns both the original patent design for marine CNG called CoCell, which is slowly lapsing because it's really just not viable. And what does excite us is the optimum technology and design, which if you look at our website, you'll just see is simply laying horizontal pipes in a ship, and then in a patented way, these are held together under pressure. And so that actually binds the pipe and therefore removes any friction and any issues from the marine guy's point of view in terms of the vessel flexing going through the ocean and things like that. So that 12 months of 17 was really all about having all that tested and completed. And then finally, in early 18, we were able to get the full approval from the American Bureau of Shipping, ABS. So that was a great landmark decision for us. And obviously, our shareholders were very, very happy to achieve that result. The next step, really, for Global Energy Ventures was then to obviously make sure we could construct the ship at a cost that was acceptable and economic for us. So we spent the next 6 months up until the middle of last year, you know, working through various shipyards in Korea, Singapore, China, and finally landed on a group called COMC Raffles in China, who gave us a very, very attractive proposal for the ship, gave us a firm price, and we then entered into a letter of intent with them to build three firm ships and options for a further three, obviously subject to financial close and securing projects. And then it's really all been about in the last 12 months working on projects, and we've certainly canvassed the globe looking for those that suit the criteria, as I mentioned before, that are in an economic distance to travel from the gas source to the customer. And publicly, at the moment, we've got two areas of operation, both in the US, taking gas out of the Gulf Coast, and also in Brazil. And in the Gulf Coast, for example, in the US, we can board the ship fully costed on a free on board basis between 40 and 50% of LNG costs. So very, very cheap. And if you looked at a 1.5 million ton LNG equivalent, our emissions would be 3 to 4 times less than LNG. So it's about 500,000 tons a year, which is equivalent to 110,000 cars per year, is the benefit to compress the gas as opposed to liquefying it. And so the same rationale goes into the area of hydrogen, where clearly the decisions at the moment are being considered as to what options.
And Morris, just before you get on to hydrogen, I just wanted to finish off on the compressed natural gas story, because I did notice that the technology was pipes, that was using pipes to store the gas in the ship. And it did occur to me, I wondered how that's patentable. I mean, that seems like a pretty obvious, or at least unpatentable idea. But you're saying that there's a twist to it that is patented.
Yeah, there is. And basically that was all about putting in to pressurise the pipe so that they actually bind together. And they can't.
What do you mean by bind together? What does that mean?
Well, in other words, it's the friction of the pipes. But you have to, I think it was, how many tonnes per square metre, guys? We're just checking the actual number, but I think from memory, it was a pressure of around about, from the deck, so just near the deck, they put in jacks and they set the jacks to press those pipes together so that they can't move.
All right. And how could you patent that idea? I mean, that seems like a pretty unpatentable thing too, surely.
Well, no, in fact, that was really for us the Holy Grail because, you know, I'm sure you know laminated timber beams, which is just thin strips of timber. And I like my layman's way to sort of chat about that. And then obviously that is all pressed together, glued together in some cases as well, but then acts very, very in a strong way. So basically these guys had something like 40 years experience in designing ships and compressing gas. They actually looked at this right at the very beginning, and the approval and regulator said, no, you can't do that because the pipes are going to move. And they said, well, hang on. Our previous design worked with a series of co-cells, which is like vertical cylinders, but they had to be separated. And so they came up with the idea that if they could press those pipes together, and it was like 5 tonnes per square metre or something of that order. So it's very, very intense to pressure all those horizontal pipes together. So that was what they actually got patented, and we've got the provisional patents, and we've actually had the second patent. There's two sorts of designs in the patent, but the second one, which is a key one for us, has actually been approved in the US now, and we announced that a little while ago, a few months ago. So we actually do have that full patent for that now, and it'll just roll out in the other countries under the treaty arrangements.
Yeah. So what are you actually going to sell, a license or a ship?
Oh, no, okay. So our business model really for CNG, for GEV, basically is to put together the project. So we're looking for gas, we're looking for the customer, and we've got the mechanism to make it economic to transport in the middle, which is our ship. And quite frankly, nobody else can compete with us in the area of compressed natural gas in a marine application. I mean, it's called optimum because you can't do more than that as compressed natural gas. So what we're looking for, our two basic models, is in some cases we have a customer, for example, that's got gas. They have an end customer, and they would like us to put in a time charter, effectively, to use our ships to take their gas to them. And they'll therefore pay a charter rate for us under that scenario. The second scenario is another group, for example, have gas, are looking for us to put together a market and to transport it for them. And so we would basically be, a toller under that arrangement. And the third model for us is that there are some pockets of stranded gas around where we wouldn't mind being involved with the molecules, so that we have more of the complete value chain. Don't have to be there, but there may be an opportunity for us to add further value to our shareholders by participating in each part of the chain, being from the molecules of the gas supplier into the compression, the transportation, and the small terminal at the other end. But primarily, I guess people need to think about us as an innovative company that is packaging up an ability to move gas within a regional area of up to 2,000 kilometres by ship.
And you would actually own the ships and charter them. Is that right?
Yeah, well, under the first business model, Alan, that is correct.
That's right. And,
you know, we've also announced the cost of the ship, but we're fortunate in that there is a very large appetite for companies to own the ships. And therefore, we, you know, effectively clip the ticket in the sense that, you know, providing we have companies that are willing to fund the ship in its totality, both equity and debt, and then we get our margin on top of that, then we're quite relaxed about that model. Earlier on, I mentioned about the 2,000 kilometres. It really is 2,000 nautical miles, Alan, which is probably closer to 3,000 kilometres, 3,500 kilometres. So sorry about that.
Yeah, right. Okay. No worries.
Just a bit further.
Now, you've had a horrible pandemic. The share price obviously sort of collapsed in early March. And I've been trying to figure out why that is, because you put out a shareholders letter in March, which didn't seem to be pretty innocuous, but it didn't seem to be. And I mean, was it just the pandemic? Because your share price hasn't recovered since then until just in the last week or so, where it's popped up. Can you give us a sense? I mean, I know most CEOs tell me, oh, no, I don't pay any attention to the share price, but can you just give us a sense of what's been going on?
Well, I think, yes, certainly happy to do that. I think certainly if we look, going back to around about January, because there was the initial January, February, March quarter was, you know, bad for the energy patch, you know, with the oil price, you know, tankering during that point. So that was sort of quite a bad period. And then once that sort of started to recover, then we had the coronavirus issue stepped in confronted us. Then we also found during that period that a lot of the companies we were dealing with, particularly the large companies, were starting to refocus their energy into renewables and restructuring their companies, retrenching staff. So it was very, very hard during the June quarter to get much traction. Some of that actually has settled down now, and what used to take us 6 weeks to turn away around a draft agreement was like taking 6 months. And so I think there were sort of the three basic issues: that oil price, it's obviously recovered now, the COVID situation, which is ongoing, you know, large oil companies refocusing, talking about zero carbon emissions in 20 years' time, shedding a lot of staff, Woodside, Shell, all those guys. So therefore, it was very, very hard to get much traction. What we are seeing now is that there seems to be more of a willingness to respond in a more timely way. And as you know, equity markets are quite fickle. And if you haven't got something in front of them fairly regularly, things sort of tends to drift down, like no news is bad news, which isn't always the case. Sometimes it is. So, yeah, we've been hit with those three particular issues, I think, pretty much simultaneously. And therefore, because we can't get agreements signed, we believe they will be signed, and we are still very, very focused on compressed natural gas in the short term. We've spent nearly 4 years on this. And so we know the projects that work economically. We've done the hard slog in terms of the complete design vessel ready to go. We have a bankable shipyard. We have Clarksons, who are the world's biggest shipbroker, behind us. They're also helping arrange the finance for us as our financial advisors. So all that area is covered. But it's really now the key to deliver a project for our shareholders rapidly. And that's our big focus. And then, of course, having all the experienced team working on compressing gas, it's not a big curve for us to also look at compressing hydrogen, which is the reason we announced our participation in that industry last week.
Yes, now let's talk about that. Is this just an additional project for you, or is it potentially a pivot?
No, it is an additional project. I mean, the reality is that there are a lot of issues to be sorted out within the supply chain. But we are strong believers in the end result, and that is to work towards zero carbon energy. And so we really feel that the expertise within this group is so strong and unique that we can offer a solution as compressed hydrogen to transport the hydrogen. So as I said right at the very beginning, Alan, to compress is a lot cheaper than liquefying. Environmentally, it's a lot more friendlier in the LNG space, and we can apply some of those benefits into the hydrogen space. But it is a long-term project, but the momentum being thrust upon us, I think, from both governments and the larger energy groups is such that we really believe we can add another layer of value for our shareholders, and not at a great expense, because we have all the basic work done. And so we do need to make some changes. Obviously, the plain pipe that we use will need to be changed. There are other things. The ship will be a little bit wider, a little bit longer. But that technical work has been done at a level we're comfortable with as a board to say, no, let's go. We see no technical showstoppers, but we just need to go through the process now of applying for our patents before we release too much information. Otherwise, if we do that, of course, we won't be able to be granted patents should we be successful.
Can you transport the compressed hydrogen any further than the compressed LNG or compressed natural gas?
Yes, we're of the view that we can, but we would rather just spend a little bit not more time finalising the ship work, and particularly the approvals with the American Bureau of Shipping, which we will probably have done quite early in the new year. So I think on the back of that, remember, whatever approvals you get in this business, there's always going to be some conditions attached to them, i.e. you build it exactly like that, or if you're going to modify it, you've got to go back to them. So there's always a to and fro process. So we're pretty confident we can go a distance further. For example, we did put in, in our release on hydrogen that we felt from the northwest of Western Australia, for example, we could see the potential of getting as far up into the North Asia sort of area. A lot will depend upon, competcompetitive pricing, the willingness of the market.
That's the question really, is whether you're going to be able to take compressed hydrogen from Australia to China.
Well, from the work that we've done at the moment, the answer is yes. Obviously, it's a lot better for us than, say, to Singapore, for example. But certainly, we believe that in time, that market will be paying a price that would allow you to take the compressed hydrogen in that distance.
Because at the moment, they're talking about turning it into ammonia to transport it by combining it with nitrogen.
Yes, and quite frankly, that is the competition for us, and there will be applications where we're more viable, and we suspect there will be applications where they're more viable. So it really will come down to offering the market another option.
Is your option potentially more viable if you could drive the ship from the hydrogen you're storing in the hold?
Well, we will be using that to fuel the ship, that's correct.
Right. Well, you can't do that with ammonia.
No, you can't. You're right. I mean, that is one of the advantages that we have. But that sort of by itself won't drive it. I mean, it'll be driven mainly by the economics, Alan. So I think at the end of the day, if you're close, those extra benefits will help once you do your energy chain, valuation of all the carbon costs and so on. So there's a lot of benefits for us as compressed hydrogen that will flow out over time. But this industry is a little way away yet, right?
But the reason I think the share market got a bit excited this week is that I think it's clear to everyone that there will be a hydrogen energy industry.
Yes.
At some point.
Correct. Very much. But we'd like to sort of do both. We'd like to close out where we started a few years ago on the compressed gas story. We're not there yet. We have to deliver a project. We've been close a couple of times, but lost a bit of momentum from late last year into this year, mainly really for the three reasons I mentioned earlier, but that's slowly getting more comfortable for us to push ahead. And then in particular, use the skill set that we've got and the guys in Calgary to work with ABS over the next two quarters to get the approval in principle. I mean, this will be very advanced because the approval in principle process basically really says at the end, there are no showstoppers, but you've got to do A, B, C, and D to prove to us that we can give you that approval to construct that ship based upon that design. So again, no showstoppers once we get AIP approval. Our technical guys, 40 years experience, they've done it all many times. Quite frankly, if they tell me as the managing director of this company that they can do it, I have absolutely total faith that they can, because they're very cautious guys. And we'll work hard on that as well. So we're pretty excited about the next year.
Where do you think your first project, commercial project for CNG is going to be? Is it Brazil?
Well, we were of the view last year we felt we would have a greater amount of traction by about now, but of course the COVID situation has been fairly dramatic. So that has really slowed us down. So our project manager, you know, for example, we had to bring him back in January, February, back home. So we've got a great partner over there, and we've now identified ourselves with three project opportunities. So it's just not a one-trick pony in Brazil for us. And that's all moving quite nicely, a little slow, but we're okay. We have also announced a US project that is moving, again, a little slower than what we wanted, but we're pretty optimistic about that. And, of course, we've been looking at other projects for the last 4 years, some of which are starting to resurface again as potentials. But from a public perspective, our main focus at the moment is Brazil and the US.
And how much money can you make? I'm just trying to get a sense of, is it on, you don't make one-off amounts of money, it's presumably an ongoing contract, is that right?
Yes, that's right. I mean, look, we've got aspirations and we sort of think about it as a per ship basis, because that's really, you know, I want the shareholders to understand that if we've got one ship, we'll earn so much, if we've got 10 ships, we'll earn, you know, 10 times that one ship amount. But as I mentioned at the beginning, Alan, there is a price and then there is the cost of the ship. And that differential will obviously is what's very, very important. We actually haven't publicly said what those numbers are. So it's a little bit difficult for me to
make. No, you can tell us. We won't tell anyone.
Well, let's just suffice it to say it's reasonably robust and... I wouldn't have continued to work in the industry if there wasn't a fairly big reward at the end of it on success. But look, it's a fair question to ask us. And I think once we've got our first CNG project to a point where we've secured both the gas and the off-taker, those economics we will obviously inform our shareholders about and give them our projected earnings as a result of that. And I think it would probably be a bit irresponsible to flag potential prices that people might not fully understand all the things we have to do to get to that point.
Are you likely to make more money with hydrogen or less or the same?
I think it won't be too different, actually. I think at the end of the day, we're talking about the cost of a ship and our margins for the technology design and putting it all together. But I suspect it'll be fairly similar.
Right. Well, I think I've wrung about as much out of you, Morris, as I'm going to get. So there you go.
Thanks very much for your interest, Alan.
That was Morris Brand, the CEO and founder of Global Energy Ventures.